here this morning. We have a public hearing set today for House Bill 2656. And actually, I only have, three witnesses and Senator Fisher right at the very bottom of the page. Does that mean you want to go last, or you want to go? Let's take you first. We'll have ask Steve to give us the staff summary and welcome Senator Fisher up to the table while we're doing that.
Members, House Bill 2656 deals with community colleges and the distribution of state funds to those community colleges. The primary thing that the bill does is to say that in the distribution of state dollars, that community college commissioner cannot take into account local property taxes raised by the community colleges in whatever methodology or formula that is used to distribute state funds. And a second side item is that the distribution formula has to support the legislative policies as set forth in ORS 341.009. And it would take effect July 1, 2003. Also, there's a subsequent referral to Ways and Means on this bill.
Okay. Senator Fisher, good morning to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to testify. I notice that the sponsors and the ones that have signed on to this bill reads like a who's who of my good friends. And I hate to come in and be a bit negative in the approach to House Bill 2656, because in theory I agree with House Bill 2656. I don't think we ought to be taking our local monies away and sending them to the state and then filling them back. That speaks of extra dollars taken out of those monies just from the process of transferring those from one place to the other. Excuse me for not introducing myself. I'm Senator Bill Fisher from the Roseburg area, and I represent three potential community colleges in this that are spoken to in this bill. Two of them wind up and get more money from this bill. One of them doesn't. And that's the crux of the problem that I've faced since I've been here in the legislature. Umpqua Community College was started largely with a lot of donations. It's been a pretty frugal school. It's been on the bottom of the list most often, or right down next to the bottom, along with Rogue Community College, for a cost per student per day. The local community got behind that college right from the start. The land was donated to it. Many of the building materials were donated. It was built not with expensive type construction, a lot of wood construction, because at that time Roseburg was built as the lumber capital of the world, and lumber was reasonable, and a lot of it was donated. And we built a college down there that was practical, that was well laid out, that has served its purpose very well. Then along came Measure 5 and a change in the funding mechanisms. And because we had operated in a manner down there to be frugal and be dollar conscious, we wound up on the low end of the totem pole when things were taken over basically by the state. Our funding and came from a different formula. So we've been hurt constantly because we started out with a very low cost and a very low rate. And now this would impinge upon us even further at a time when I would suggest it's not exactly the right time to be starting to shuffle monies around between community colleges, favoring one over another without some kind of a guarantee that the state funds that are available to fund those colleges will be formulated in such a way to make them whole. And I guess that's my grave concern here today, that while this matter, as I understand it, is trying to be decided by a court case, we are kind of tampering with the overall formula, which may or may not be good in the follow-through of that case. And it certainly would not be good for some of the colleges that are out there struggling right now to do the best they can for their constituents. As I said, I don't have any problem at all with the property taxes staying in the local area, but in conjunction with the problems that Measure 5 created, Measure 47 followed up with, I think that it's a duty that we have to make sure that we don't take it out on a school that got into a situation whereby they were constantly beat up with the funding formula and not able to basically hold their own with the rest of the bulk of the colleges in a different position. So I would ask that you look carefully at this issue as you're looking it over, and if it can be done some way that basically leaves the money in the local area for the local colleges and the formula can be worked out with the state level that can even things out. I think we've got a reverse situation here. Most all of us in the rural areas who've been a bit stymied by the loss of our agricultural dollars and our timber dollars, we've been frustrated that we've had to share those when they came in with the larger communities that haven't maybe had the timber dollars in their budgets before. We've then turned around and tried to equal things out by getting a little extra help from them for the rural areas. They've objected to that. Now some of the rural areas are coming up and saying, we didn't mind getting some money from other areas, but we don't want to give any money to someplace else. And it's kind of a odd situation that we face here, where apparently most of us are looking out for our own behind rather than exactly what we can do to help people out around the state at a time when all of us are suffering to a certain extent from the financial vagaries of the times we're living in. So I would ask you to very carefully look at this and try to remember that we do have some community colleges that have been doing a very good job that will be seriously hurt if this goes through it the way it is. And I thank you for your courtesy to allow me to testify.
Thank you very much. Questions for Senator Fisher? All right. Thanks for coming in. Okay. Let's move back up to the top of the witness list then and bring up Bob Barber from Central Oregon Community College. President Barber, good morning.
Good morning, Chairman Charlie, members of the committee. There are three members, other members of our group that I'd like to invite to the table, our chair and
while they're coming forward, committee, just President Barber, let me mention I've got a bill down in hearing room D that I may be buzzed on to go down and testify. So if I get up and leave quickly, it will not be a sign of any reaction to your testimony.
Chairman Chatterley, members of the committee, my name is Bob Barber. I'm president of Central Oregon Community College. And I'd like to start my testimony, explain a little bit about the bill, and then members of our group would like to share a little bit about the experience at their college. With me, I have Margaret Bradford from Rogue Community College, Mike Gaudette from Southwestern Oregon Community College, and the chairman of the board at Central Oregon Community College. I think I would like to start my comments by just saying I regret that I am here. I'm here speaking at odds with some of my community college colleagues, but I think the issue needs to be addressed now. I believe that the community college family, which is what we call ourselves, to some extent might be perceived as a dysfunctional family. And I feel like I'm one of the children that needs to speak out about what we see happening within the movement of community colleges and perhaps have some other outside people take a look at what's going on and what's happening. I'd like to stress that we are not here asking for revenues. I'd like to mention that this is not a recent problem. This is not caused by the economic decline. And I do believe that there are some solutions that could address this particular problem. As you know, we are requesting the removal of property tax as a factor in the community college formula. the property taxes are not actually shifted between the districts, but on paper they are taken into consideration and the formula is adjusted, reducing the allocation to those community colleges that have more often historically been supported by their community. We have always believed that this is a misappropriation of local dollars, and we have tried informally over the last decade to stop this process, most recently in the last 4 or 5 years. Unfortunately, the decisions about the shifting of property taxes is usually left to advice from the Council of Presidents to the State Board of Education. The decision is normally made about a vote or a consensus, and historically over the last 5, 6, 7, 8 years, the majority has voted to move the property taxes from the minority votes. I think this is really interesting that I should even be allowed to vote as to whether or not my property taxes should be shifted, as if I have the authority to speak for my taxpayers and say, it's really okay for you to shift these taxpayers. So I'm not even sure that this should be voted on in the Council of Presidents. There's no formal written policy about moving and shifting property taxes within the constellation of policies of the State Board of Education. There is no authority in the legislative statutes to shift property taxes, and we just feel it's something that really needs to be looked at. In fact, from 1957 on up until 1996, in the state's allocation of property taxes, they never took into consideration the local property taxes of a district. So it's recently, it's actually a recent phenomenon. What I'd like to do is just give you a sense of scope, because what you'll hear is a lot of numbers, and you can get confused in the numbers. What we're talking about is the shifting of between $5 or $6 million within the community of community colleges. You may recall at this particular time we're looking at about $400 million allocation to community colleges, and perhaps another $49-50 million in property taxes. And we're fortunate to have Brett West here, and he knows numbers better than I do, so mine are all approximate. But we're talking about $6 million being shifted out of about $450 million in allocation, $6 million per annum. So we're only talking 2-3% of the total mix of money. The problem is that it affects 5 or 6 colleges very dramatically. In our particular case, we shift $1.7 million, $1.8 million, which is about 9% of our budget. And that money can be shifted to a larger college, and it will increase their budget by 1.5% or 2%. So the shifting of money has very dramatic impact on the smaller colleges and the colleges that are affected, and maybe not the extreme impact on the larger colleges. But we are not talking about a huge amount of money, but it's a huge amount of money to those colleges which are affected. As I was saying, there is no direct policy about shifting local property taxes. The move to use property taxes came after ballot measure 5, when there was a lot of discussion about perhaps modeling the community college formula after the K-12 formula. The K-12 moved to an equity-based formula. The legislature provided some backfill money to make this work. And there was some belief that, well, perhaps we should move the community college into the same model. We would argue that community colleges should not be modeled after K-12. There is not a community college in every district. It's not constitutionally mandated. And the legislative process and local property taxes can be changed radically, whereas in the K-12 they cannot. When they moved to the equity-based formula, and the legislature at that particular time did not choose to backfill the equity, the formula was not changed back. Even though at that particular time there was a lot of discussion about evaluating the impact on the community colleges that were affected, when the property taxes were taken into consideration, when the backfill didn't come, nothing changed. The property taxes were still taken into consideration, and the impact on the colleges that were affected was never truly evaluated in terms of the effect on the change in program, the change in the types of services we could provide. The shift then became moving the allocation of dollars or the request of dollars into a growth formula process, where we wanted to make the argument to the legislature that the more dollars we have, the more we could grow. The logic is sound. The legislature on occasion responded. Unfortunately, the money was redirected through the flawed equity-based formula. So, in fact, the monies were not redirected necessarily directly to the growth-based colleges at the level at which they were growing, which affected some of us also. These issues have been brought up time and time again, and as I've indicated before, the process of whether or not the formula should be changed has always gone back to a vote. The majority of colleges have always benefited from the reallocation of the property taxes, have always voted in favor of keeping it the way it is, and the minority have always lost. And that's why we believe that perhaps this should be addressed by the legislature as to whether or not local property taxes should be used to buttress and backfill what we believe is a fundamentally flawed formula. The fact that you now see more than one piece of legislation, I believe there could be upwards of four, affecting the formula, would indicate that we are not the only group that believes the formula needs to be addressed by the legislature. People are looking at different models, different solutions, because it's very difficult through the current process to get any change to the formula the way it currently exists and the way it's currently voted on within the system. We are also concerned that when and with the fact that we don't believe that there's been adequate evaluation on the impact of this formula over the last 6 years, things like economies of scale, size of the college, types of programs are not taken into consideration at all. And so what we're seeing now during the economic decline is the impact of this 6 years of formula on the colleges that have been impacted. The Council of Presidents met last week, and as they were sharing their budget reductions, it was interesting to note that the colleges who were pretty much the beneficiaries of the current formula were experiencing 10% cuts overall within their budget. The colleges that have been, I want to use the word victims, but it's a little strong, victims of the formula, are experiencing in the range of 18 and 20% reductions. There is something fundamentally wrong with this formula if the reductions are not spread smoothly across the system. We have a concern that the taking of local property tax money under the pretense of a broad state agenda, whether that be workforce, whether that be access, whatever it is, that taking the property tax from the local communities on that pretense and then redirecting the property tax through a formula which gives the authority of the institutions to use the money any way they want is wrong. It would be different if the state captured the local money and perhaps all the tuition and perhaps all the bond money or whatever it is, drew it together and put it out as the state agenda and tried to bring the colleges in alignment. But to move the local property tax to the colleges and then, quote, give them a free hand to decide the programs they're going to use means that our local property taxes can be used to support programs in other areas which we don't fundamentally agree with. Now, we are not asking the committee to rewrite the formula. We are asking the committee to consider the use of local property taxes by the state in the reallocation of the formula. That's our fundamental request. We believe the State Board of Education is still in a position to rewrite the formula, but we would like to put boundaries and parameters around how they do that. We also believe that there are solutions that the State Board could consider. One of the fundamental questions that we've talked about over the years is if the state, through the State Board of Education, would like to get parity across property taxes, and we're talking about $6 million. Instead of shifting $6 million out of some of the smaller colleges, perhaps they should consider taking the $6 million off the top of the state allocation. Take it off the $404 million or the $375 or whatever we end up with, and redistribute and balance the property tax if that is their primary concern. And then the balance of dollars that are left can be distributed by the FTE formula. I'm not saying that's the perfect solution. I'm saying that could be a solution. There are other ways to do this. I agree with Senator Fisher's comments. We don't want to favor one college over another. The fact that 10% of our budget has been reduced in order to fundamentally move our resources to another college puts us at disfavor. it's interesting to me that the colleges that potentially would see a reduction in their budget feel that they're being disadvantaged. And there's never been any consideration to the fact that some of us have lost up to 10% of our budget and we're disadvantaged. Over the last 5 years, $10 million has effectively been moved from Central Oregon for the purpose of supporting the formula. There is no consideration of the disadvantage that has been to our community. There was a comment about not tampering with the formula. We believe the formula has been tampered with consistently, but we lose the vote. So I would support him. I think we need a new formula, a better formula that doesn't take into consideration local property taxes. I think in closing of my comments, and then I'd like to ask the committee to listen to the members of our group, I think there's just a fundamental issue of whether or not the state, or if you will, the State Board of Education really has the authority to ask one community college to effectively underwrite or subsidize another community college programs with their local property taxes. If in fact that's what they want to do, they should use the state allocation to do that. They shouldn't be moving the local property taxes out of some colleges into other colleges. And they do this on paper. The actual dollars don't move. They do it by how they write the formula. So we're asking this committee to consider whether or not putting boundaries on the use of local property taxes is appropriate. We believe it is, and we ask your consideration.
All right. Thank you, President Barber. If I can interrupt this panel just for one witness, Representative Patridge, one of the sponsors of the bill, has come in and has another committee that he's involved with, so if I could invite him up before we continue on with the panel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm State Representative Rob Patridge, House District 6, which is basically the city of Medford. The community college that we have in Southern Oregon that affects my area specifically is Rogue Community College. I just wanted to share with you, part of the reason this legislation was introduced is because of the equity argument that really the people in Southern Oregon, we feel, are paying substantially higher tuition, which you will hear from the college as well compared to other colleges in the state, as well as the fact that we have a broad base of support there locally. But as we go in and we get support, some of that money gets drained off to the rest of the state. Our concern continues to be the funding formula for community colleges. This is my third legislative session. This is the third legislative session I have had to continue to battle the funding formula for community colleges. Rogue Community College in 1990, prior to 1999, expanded from Josephine County into Jackson County. The enrollment rose substantially. We had to battle the funding formula then. We've battled the funding formula every single legislative session I've been here about what was equitable and what was not, especially based on expansion. We've had coalitions built with Southwest Oregon Community College and the community college that's in Klamath Falls to try and look at some of these things as these colleges continue to expand. It is my belief that the funding formula is fundamentally flawed. This committee should really take a substantial look at what is fair and equitable to the citizens of the state based upon what they're willing to step up. We don't have the same problems here we have in the K through 12 education environment in terms of redistributing the property taxes and redistributing the monies to provide the equity pieces. Local jurisdictions have stepped up in support of their community colleges and various communities throughout the state, and frankly, we don't feel that they should be penalized for that fact. So I'm not going to pretend to be an expert on the formula. All I can tell you is this has continued to be a problem time and time and time again. And we've had to step on the air hose of community colleges and funding formulas several times in order to make sure, down in the Ways and Means process, in order to make sure that things were treated equitably. And we were able to achieve some of that. I'd hope that this committee could help resolve that problem on an ongoing basis so we don't have to spend this committee's time nor the Ways and Means Committee's time nor the times of our college presidents and their boards of directors in battling this issue. I know it will take from some, but is that necessarily fundamentally fair to to redistribute pieces and parts of that. So I understand that it is a weighty task that this committee is being asked to address, but I certainly appreciate the chair and members of the committee taking this under consideration. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for Representative Pepperidge? All right.
Thank you.
Thanks. President Barber, why don't you come on back up, and who's next?
Let me introduce Margaret Bradford from Rogue Community College.
Good morning.
Morning. Chairman Shetterly and honored members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today on behalf of House Bill 2656. My name is Margaret Bradford, and I'm the Director of College Communications at Rogue Community College. You also have the written testimony provided by RCC President Rick Levine before you, and I would just like to summarize a few of his key points. Inclusion of property taxes in the community college funding formula was designed to develop equity among the 17 Oregon community colleges. That goal has not been achieved, however. Instead, Central Oregon, Rogue, Southwestern Oregon, and Clatsop community colleges have become disadvantaged by the funding formula, each losing millions of dollars in property taxes that were intended by the voters of our communities for their local community college services. The voters did not intend for their property dollars to be reallocated to other community colleges, and the result of this reapportionment has meant disproportionately higher tuition rates for our students and our disadvantaged community colleges. In 2001, for example, Rogue Community College lost $1.3 million in property taxes through reallocation. Central Oregon lost more than $1.6 million. And RCC's tuition was $47, while Central's was $43. At the same time, Lynn Benton received $700,000 in redistributed taxes and charged just $36 per credit, while Portland received $2.9 million in reallocated property tax dollars and charged just $40 a credit. Where was the equity intended by redistributing our taxpayers' dollars? We didn't see it. Those colleges which have been subsidized by property taxes from other districts are facing tuition increases this year, but so are the unsubsidized colleges, and those increases are on top of almost yearly tuition jumps. Last year, as enrollment grew and state funding shrank, RCC had the highest tuition rate in the state. This year it's $49 a credit, and next year it will increase another $10 a credit. These tuition increases have been made along with cuts to staff and programs just to keep pace with reductions in state funding. Over the next 5 years, Rogue stands to lose nearly $6.7 million in state revenue. Now, Governor Kulongowski told us that we should look for local solutions to this challenge. Keeping our local property tax dollars approved by local voters for use in local programs is one way to meet this challenge. We fail to see the equity, however, in donating tax dollars to other community colleges to help them keep their tuition low, especially when our students from rural and historically high unemployment districts are already struggling to pay their tuition and fees. To draw a parallel, the city of Grants Pass recently passed a public safety levy. And despite the double majority required, voters said yes to safer streets and fire protection. I question whether they would have voted to tax themselves for these services if they knew that $1.5 million would be redistributed to Portland, Eugene, or Albany. In conclusion, I'd like to emphasize that our students, most of whom are working adults, are bearing the greatest burden of this funding formula. They're paying for their education and training through income taxes, property taxes, and tuition. It's only fair and equitable that their property taxes should remain in and be used by the districts in which they were approved. Thank you again for this opportunity to speak.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Bradford. Once again, we've been joined by another, the chief sponsor of the bill, Representative Canope. So let me interrupt the panel one more time and invite Representative Canope to come forward. And we welcome you to the Revenue Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee. I was asked to sponsor this bill after a significant community debate over, obviously, community college funding and the lack of action that we saw at the state level as it relates to the funding formula and a lot of the issues that have come forward. Obviously, I support the bill. We clearly need to find a new direction and a new way to do this. I'm sure you've heard the testimony that in the end, if the formula stays essentially the way it is, that there are going to be three districts that, or just a couple actually, that ultimately will benefit, and the rest are essentially going to be donor districts and will continue to lose based on the formula the way it is now. And, you know, I have some serious concerns about whether some of our community colleges, especially in rural areas, will be able to continue to provide much service at all if we keep going down the road we're going. And while I recognize that we're in difficult budget times and that rearranging the formula obviously takes from one pot and gives to another, and that might not be ideal for some members on this committee, I hope that you would recognize that there is a problem that needs to be addressed here, and I think this bill is the opportunity to address that and start that dialogue, and hopefully we can make progress with that this session. But I just want to lend my voice and my support for the effort to keep that going and to see in which ways we might be able to change the situation to make it more palatable. Some would say fair, but I guess fair will be in the eye of the beholder on the changes on this. But I really look forward to the committee taking a serious look at this and how we might be able to make those changes. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Questions for Representative Knope? Anybody? All right. Thank you for stopping down. President Barber, we'll leave you to conduct the remainder of the panel.
Well, I think we'll just go down the table, Mr. Chairman. Changing our roles here. I'd like to introduce Mike Gaudette from Southwestern Oregon Community College.
My name is Mike Gaudette. I'm the Dean of College Advancement at Southwestern Oregon Community College. Chairman Shetterly and members of the committee, I'm here today to testify in support of HB 2656. You have a written narrative, and I will try to summarize that briefly. Over 40 years ago, a citizen-led initiative established Southwestern Oregon Community College. It was led by Henry Hansen, a local longshoreman, who believed fervently that the children of local working-class families ought to have the same higher education opportunities as Oregonians in other parts of the state. They believed strongly in local control and local responsibility, and they approved a tax base to assure that there would be adequate resources to provide comprehensive, affordable access to higher education at their local community college. But today, we have a funding formula. And that community college funding formula purports to create equity. But what is equity? Let me suggest that equity is when you get what you're paying for. If the citizens of a community college district choose to support their community college at a high level through local property taxes, they should enjoy the benefits of that choice. And if they choose to support it at a lower level, they should endure the consequences of that choice. Of course, none of us are naive enough to imagine that there is equity in all taxation. There are those who have more and ought to pay more. And the state appropriately recognizes and capitalizes on that disparity in the state income tax and other revenue streams. But that should not be the case with locally approved taxes. Equity is when the discretionary taxes that citizens voluntarily impose on themselves through the local election process are used as those citizens intended. Discretionary taxes voluntarily imposed by citizens at the local level. How would the citizens of Portland or Eugene feel if the property tax increases they've approved in the past for capital construction at their local community colleges went into the funding formula? If that happened, their share of the legislative appropriation would be reduced proportionately and reallocated to their community college colleagues who haven't been able to pass a construction bond levy. After all, Lane and PCC wouldn't need that extra money from the state appropriations. They now have the funds to build buildings. So why shouldn't a portion of their legislative appropriation then go instead to Southwestern, who hasn't been able to pass a bond levy in the past 24 years? Well, wait a minute. Those citizens in those community college districts, they chose to pass those local property taxes to absorb those increases so they could have improved facilities. It would be wrong to penalize those community colleges, wouldn't it, by reducing their share of legislative appropriations? Well, you're right. It would be wrong. But that's exactly what's happening with the funding formula. That's because our local community college approved tax bases that the citizens expect to be dedicated to maintaining a high level of local higher education access is not being used locally. The current rendition of the community college funding formula removes the benefit of locally approved property taxes. Instead of purchasing a margin of excellence for those colleges, in effect, those local property taxes are being diverted to other community colleges because of reducing the college's share of the legislative appropriation. Now, the citizens of community college districts throughout the state have voluntarily approved those property taxes to support their local colleges. Some have higher rates of millage per thousand, some have lower rates. But the taxpayers are supporting their local community colleges at the level they have chosen, local control. The funding formula supersedes and trivializes the will of the people when it includes local property taxes, because it results in reducing state allocations based on the public's local support of its community college. Consequently, the citizens of that college district receive a reduced benefit, despite the commitment and the intent of its taxpayers. And that's tantamount to forcing a community college district to share its property taxes with another college. The concerns about equity in the funding formula would be understandable if community college districts with low property values, such as was the case with K-12, were consistently being shortchanged on local property tax collections, leaving them woefully underfunded. But the reality is that what's happened with the funding formula is exactly the opposite. Districts like Southwestern that have low property values are instead, because they have higher millage rates, sending our property taxes to districts with some of the highest property values in the state. The big gainers in the funding formula are PCC in Portland, Mount Hood in Gresham, Lynn Benton in Corvallis in Albany, and Lane in Eugene. This can't be construed as equity under any model. If locally approved taxes aren't going to be used to provide a margin of excellence, but instead are going to be used to reduce needed state support from the community colleges that have good tax bases, with the saved dollars being reallocated to other community colleges, why aren't all locally approved taxes included in the formula, including capital facilities bonds? Southwestern serves a district that encompasses all of Coos County, Curry County, and Western Douglas County. The nearest four-year university is over 2 hours away, and from parts of our district, it's over 3 hours away to a four-year university. For most of our students who are geographically bound to the area by jobs or family, there are no other higher education options. Southwestern has already lost $1.5 million in property tax dollars to the funding formula, mostly to other larger colleges. Is it equitable that the citizens of a college district that has a high unemployment rate, one of the lowest per capita incomes in the state, and a huge need for job training should be sharing its property taxes with community colleges that serve citizens who are, frankly, much better off? Shouldn't a community striving desperately for economic revival be allowed to use all its locally generated property taxes for local workforce development? citizens of Southwestern's district deserve to keep the property taxes they approved. In conclusion, the community college funding formula purports to create equity, when in fact, it continues to perpetrate an egregious inequity to one half of the state's community colleges and bestows undeserved additional funding to the other half at the expense of the losers. There's only one way to restore equity to community college funding in Oregon, and that's to guarantee that the discretionary taxes that citizens have voluntarily imposed on themselves through the local election process are used as those citizens intended. And HB 2656 will do that. Thank you.
All right, Mr. Goodell. Thank you very much. And we have one more in the panel. Right?
Yeah, the final member of the panel I'm pleased to introduce, Don Reeder. Don Reeder is chair of our local board. And as we have all heard, local control is a very important factor of the community colleges. We ask our boards and lay citizens to represent us in our local communities, to support us, and then to make the types of decisions to move us forward. In a time where sometimes it's difficult to get people to even run for these boards, we are blessed with good, strong members at the community college, and I'd like to introduce Don Reeder, our chair. He's been on our board for 6 or 7 years now. Don.
Thank you, Reeder. Welcome.
Well, thank you, Chairman and committee members. As stated, my name is Don Reeder. I'm board chair this year. I went on the board in 1997. I was reelected in 2001. My district is Madras, Warm Springs, Culver, Crooked River Ranch. I can go into many more little cities, I guess, but I won't. What happened in August or September are the staff came to us and stated that of our $21.5 million budget, $3.5 million may have to be cut depending upon the economic forecast. Well, as you know, it was cut, $3.5 million. This time and era that we live in reminds me of going to a national community college convention in San Diego right after 9/11, and I had the honor of sitting beside an African-American gentleman from New York City who lived about a mile or two away from Ground Zero. He lost two people in his, two very close friends of his in the World Trade Center. We talked about that, and we asked about each of our different districts, and it's like comparing apples and oranges. He has a district in New York City, walks across a mile away from World Trade Center, and I explained that our district is 10,000 square miles and is about as big as some states, and I have to drive 45 miles to our board meeting from Madras to Bend, and I explained explained each other's situations, and he asked, well, how much do you get paid? And I said, well, nothing. He said, man, you sure are crazy. So I thought, good Lord. Now I'm beginning to wonder. Because, I went on the board as chairman this year, facing over 100 people who have come to testify. We're having to cut programs. I'd be remiss in not speaking about one or two of these people. I had a gentleman, proposing to cut the automotive program, and I have a member from my past graduate from my community, Warm Springs community, Native American. He drove from Warm Springs, which is over 75 miles to Bend, each and every day to get an education. In automotive, put almost 100,000 miles on a car. He testified, don't drop automotive. I'm supporting my family. I'm running the Warm Springs pool or motor pool. I'm supporting 5 or 6 people. Don't drop this program. Geographic Information Systems is another program we're considering cutting. A young gentleman testified to us that he got out of prison. He didn't know what to do. We have a counseling center. He came to the counseling center. He found out about this Geographic Information Systems. He took the class. Now he's earning over $100,000. I thought maybe I should get back into school on Geographic Information Systems as well. But then we had a group of citizens from Prineville, and we're thinking about closing the center. And I'd like to quote what was said as best as I can. We pay property taxes, and we expect you to provide services here in Prineville. And the person slammed his fist on the table as he was testifying. Well, we said, well, you had to tell them no. That you really don't pay your local taxes to support CLCC. Under the current funding formula, half of your property taxes are actually being used to support college programs and services elsewhere in Oregon. And one of them said later, then we can no longer support funding through local bond measures. And I couldn't say anything. How can I blame them for that feeling? Really, why come to the legislature and ask this be repealed? And it's all based around local control. Some people say, well, why not raise tuition? That way you can fund these programs. you're not sitting, I mean, you are. You're sitting in front of mothers who are displaced, workers, displaced mill workers who simply raising tuition is not the answer to provide services to them. We serve many people who just simply fall through the cracks of education, and those are the people that we need to serve. And if there's anyone to blame, after five or six or seven sessions our staff trying to explain this complicated formula to us, really it boils down to one thing in my mind: money. Money is control. And unfortunately, our local board is losing control of being able to provide those services to our local community. And it disturbs me that that's happening. And the policy of the legislature needs to determine whether or not local control and community colleges, which I feel is very important, extremely important, will be the standard or otherwise. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I greatly appreciate your effort to put a human face on your presentation. I always greatly appreciate that, because I think sometimes when we're listening to testimony, facts and figures and lots of things are of interest, but there's nothing like showing the impact on human beings that we have and good Oregonians. So I'm going to open it now to questions, and if you'll just identify which person you would like to ask a question of, whether it's Dr. Barber or Mike Godet or Mrs. Bradford, any of them. Okay. Representative Farr.
Actually, not a question, Madam Chair. Thank you. Just a comment. I'm from Lane County. I did go to Lane Community College. My son goes to Lane Community College, and I committed to you guys last week that I'm behind your bill, so there you have it.
Other comments or questions? I have a question, just so that I completely understand your process. Your decisions are made by a vote. In other words, when you are all together, before the report goes to the State Board of Education, it's my understanding from what you've said, Dr. Barber, that you vote. Can you give me an idea of how many people are there at the table? When did you agree on this method of making a decision by vote? If indeed there's a fairness issue through all of your testimony. So I'm curious as to how you got into a position where there would be a no win every time if you're depending on a vote. Could you explain that?
I'm going to make my best effort to explain it, and then I think Commissioner Brawley is also on the docket to speak, and when she comes up, she can chime in and see if I was even close to correct. The decision-making process in the community colleges has been an evolving process. I've been fortunate to be a president of a community college in Oregon for 18 years. When we first started meeting in the late 80s, it was done kind of by an informal consensus. The amount of money, the types of decisions were less powerful because the communities were in a position to use their local property taxes to make program decisions. in the 90s with the shift of ballot measure 5, ballot measure 50, and other types of things, the President's Council has historically been an advisory body to the State Board of Education. And in its advisory role, it would take positions and forward their position through the commissioner, or who is ever in charge at that time, currently it's a commissioner, their opinions to the state board. And then the state board would take that recommendation or information in advisement, and then ultimately the commissioner makes a recommendation to the state board, and then when the state board wants to change the formula, they do it by administrative rule. They received the authority to do it by administrative rule in 1987. It's only been in the last, five, six, 7 years that the President's Council has moved to actually taking votes within the Council instead of operating from consensus. And pretty much the votes are only taken on the issue of formula or funding. We take very few votes. Because there needed to be clarity as to what the position was. And the reason we moved to votes was the minority felt that to say that the presidents, by consensus, agreed to change the formula was a little too vague, and that we wanted to be more specific and say that there were a number of colleges that did not agree with the consensus and felt it was wrong. So we moved to a voting style, if you will, within the last 5 or 6 years. The Council of Presidents, I'd like to affirm once again, does not make the final decision. It makes a recommendation through the commissioner to the state board. The state board has historically used it kind of as an advisory body. I'm not sure I've totally answered your question. Am I close?
You're close. thank you. I guess my next question is, do you do minority reports?
That's a good question. I almost have to look at the camp. Historically, some of the minority college, particularly the one that I work for, makes a minority report. We usually put in writing what our concerns are. An example is there is currently an administrative rule that the state board has taking a hearing on. We have submitted in writing our minority position. I do not believe that all the colleges follow that practice.
I have another question for you, and that is, has the commission ever recommended to the state board, or has the state board ever voted in a way that would differ from the vote that was taken by the President's Council?
In the best of my memory, the state board has only once, and that's recently this past year, not followed the general recommendation of the Council of Presidents. The Council of Presidents has recently voted, again there was a split vote, but they did vote to make a recommendation about the formula, which was forwarded to the state board. The commissioner took that under advisement and made a different recommendation to the state board, and Commissioner Brawley can speak to that when she comes to the table. So this is the first time in my memory, there may have been others, but it's the one that I remember, where the state board has actually not taken the direct advisement from the Council of Presidents.
May I jump in? We debated on the board whether or not it was appropriate for President Barber to even participate in that proceeding as a on the state level when you're dealing with local taxes, and our the board's strong opinion that local control should prevail.
All right. Any other questions or comments?
Madam Chair.
Representative Blagens.
Just a couple of points. I actually was a student. I grew up in Bend and was a student at COCC, so I did my first year of college at COCC. And I've always been fond of the institution. That being said, I guess I want to make a couple of points. One, it seems to me that one of the reasons, and I appreciated the example about capital construction and passing bond measures for capital construction. One of my concerns about that, though, is we typically don't fund capital construction at the state level. And so there is a distinction, I think, between a capital bond that passes where bricks and mortar are built in a community supported by the local community, and the broader issue related to operational expenses of a college, which we do fund substantially through state dollars and the state appropriation that goes into the system. So I guess I'd take a little bit of issue with your example and your testimony, because I think they are two separate things, and they come from separate approaches to how we deal with community college funding. And then secondly, Madam Chair, just a broader comment. Given the area that I represent, which is Tigard in Washington County and some of the greater Portland community, we would be more than pleased at any time, and I've said this in this committee before, at any time we want to go to a full system of eat what you kill in tax revenue production. If every dollar that comes out of my counties can route back to my community for my community services, I will vote for that in a heartbeat at any moment anyone wants to put that bill forward.
All right. Thank you very much.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Thank you.
Representative Hess.
I just would like to echo some of that same sentiment, that when you factor in not just the property taxes but the income taxes that people pay in this state, if the rules are going to be, okay, we're only going to look out for our schools or our community colleges, then the real reality would be that the schools in Washington County or the Portland area would be well-funded, community colleges and K through 12, and the reality would be that many schools in rural Oregon would be closing. And that's just the reality. And I know in the K through 12 system, Portland sends about $400 million a year to other parts of the state. And no one is saying that that's wrong, it's just what it is. And in fact, over the recent election on ballot measure 28, the Portland area said, give me some more of that. We'll pay even more. And rural area said, no thanks, even though they would have come out ahead under the way that the system is set up now. So I think this has to be viewed in a bigger picture than what is being represented here today. And I, for one, don't want us to get to a situation where we're all just looking out for our own little slice of the pie. It's not good state policy. And it is disheartening to me to see community colleges trying to cannibalize each other in order to survive. That is just not what I came down here to do. And what we really need is a fair solution that adds more money into the formula, period, and make this system, and I, like Representative Williams, I was a beneficiary of a community college system myself in Oregon, and that's where I'd really like us to go instead of these side roads that really don't fix the big problem and end up really, I think, in dead ends.
Any response? Dr. Barb.
Actually, I agree with Representative Haas, but I don't feel the current system achieves that goal. First of all, I think it's interesting that over the last 5 years, the community colleges have participated in letting their property tax be used in the formula, have been good partners. But the system never came back and backfilled for taking the property taxes. And so the burden is being placed on a small number of colleges. There are other solutions. If the state wants to balance the property taxes, then they should take it out of the state allocation. They shouldn't go to two or three, four small colleges and start moving property taxes. The same goal can be achieved in terms of the fairness of spreading of the taxes by restructuring the formula and perhaps taking it right off the top and not trying to victimize two or three colleges. It's interesting that the thought now is that we're going to go cannibalize the other colleges now. There are five or six of us who believe that five or six colleges were cannibalized 5 years ago, and we've never been in a position to fight back. And we've run out of informal means to do that. We have been cannibalized already. To ask the larger colleges to give up a small percentage of their budget to backfill the property taxes is something we feel is just, because it was taken 5 years ago and nobody cared. And we said, come down and look what happens to our programs, compare tuition, compare taxes. It hasn't happened. Most of these folks have never been on our campus. So it's not about what we're trying to do now. It's what we're trying to correct. And it can be corrected using the state dollars. I have no problem with the state dollars being used to backfill Portland, Mount Hood, and any of the other colleges. If they want to take it off the top and give the money to Portland right off the top or Mount Hood or anyone else, and President Carrion's going to testify in a minute, and he can speak to that. They can take it right off the top and backfill. Just leave ours alone. Take it out of the state allocation and build their budgets up as high as they want.
If I may, in regard to Representative Williams' comments about operations versus construction, that is true. There's no doubt. But trying to explain that to a Prineville resident in that board meeting was very difficult. That's
why we have community colleges.
$1 out of their pocket is $1, whether or not it goes to operation or construction. And the thought of $1 going elsewhere to our local residents is not good. For me to try and explain on Representative Haas's comments about K through 12 is based upon an equity formula. My equity formula is my understanding, and each kid in Fossil should have the same education as a kid in Prineville. I guess it's a theory for K through 12, but each of us in our different areas have different needs. In our area, we've got an extreme rural need that's almost inviolate, and I'm going to fight on the board to the end to not get rid of this very important program, which is nursing. We need nurses in Madras Bend, and we train, I think, for the third or fourth largest producer of nurses. We're going to fight to keep that program, and that costs more than what we get back, but we're going to fight for that, and that's definitely not based upon an equity. It's a local control issue.
Well, I thank the members of the panel. Ms. Bradford, did you want to make any comments? We put you off to the side there. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next on the list is the president of the Portland Community College, President
Carrion.
Help me here with this pronunciation. I want
it's,
to.
It's Carrion.
Carrion.
Jesus Carrion.
All right. Welcome.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, you have some testimony that has been handed out to you this morning. And I, like my colleague, Dr. Barber, regretfully am sitting here speaking in opposition to this bill and to this approach. My main concern has always been the support fund, the overall support fund for the community colleges, which sits right now just at slightly about $400 million, and there are discussions about perhaps that even dropping lower, along with the $250 million bonding issue. Those are the issues that I'm really concerned about, deeply concerned about, and I think this body, this committee and the legislature as a whole needs to focus their attention, their energy, and their efforts. The President's Council and the State Board, absolutely. I think Dr. Barber's correct. They act as an advisory committee. But let me put it into context for you. When we say that there's a 14-3 vote, Portland is one quarter of all the FTE in the state, over 100,000 students. Three of these institutions are not accredited as institutions as community colleges today. Two of those, Tillamook and Columbia Gorge, are tied to us by contract. So our accreditation can be negatively affected by what happens to them. So am I worried about their finances? Absolutely. And yet they voted in opposition to me in terms of the original president's position regarding funding. It's convoluted, and I absolutely agree with Dr. Barber that the funding mechanism that we have now doesn't work. But there's a bigger issue that I think this committee and the legislature has to deal with, and it's a tax structure that's not working for all agencies. Combining that, I'm not locally funded, for God's sake. When you got 53% of my dollars coming from the state, am I missing something? I am state controlled. I mean, it's pretty simple. This is not complicated. Then when you look at tuition, we're not at $40. We're at $45. And I've already recommended to my board at a board meeting last Thursday, we are going to $58. Mount Hood is at $61. So to paint the picture, and I'm a history major, so historians don't lie. This just rearrange the facts. And so what I'm trying to do is give you the facts as we see them right today. There is no great disparity among the tuition. I'm here to report to you, unfortunately, not only are my colleagues in Central and Southwestern and Lane and Mount Hood and Klamath having to raise tuition, but so is Portland, so is Mount Hood, so is Clackamas. Unfortunately, everyone suffers. For every Native American in an automotive program, multiply that tenfold by the African-American students, the Latino students, the Asian students, the women, the single mothers in the Portland metropolitan area. I'm not here to do a one-upsmanship. I have no choice, Madam Chair, members of this committee, but to speak at a much, much different level. Not only am I concerned about Portland, but I'm equally as concerned about this state, and I'm the incoming chair of the American Association of Community Colleges. For me to sit here and to attack my colleagues, to disparage my colleagues, to paint the picture that I should benefit over them is wrong, and I won't do that. I worry about as much as them as I do about my own constituents. Several of these bills that will be coming in front of the legislature are all tweaks to a formula that is essentially flawed. But I believe this process is incorrect, and I think this approach is incorrect. The Portland Community College Board is real clear, and I send best wishes on behalf of Doreen Margolin, our chair, and the rest of the board. They are in complete unanimous opposition to all of the funding bills, not just this one, but anything that simply takes one part of the problem and to tries to address it. And as already mentioned, and frankly, you've done part of my presentation, then let's not just put property tax on the table. Let's deal with income tax. Let's put them all on the table. Okay? If we're going to talk about funding, we're going to talk about resources, let's put everything on the table and let's start cutting the pie equally. But we're not going to do that. So therefore, why are we looking at one portion and attempting to resolve something that clearly is already needs to be addressed? And again, let me emphasize that I am in support of what Dr. Barber said in terms of this funding formula is flawed and we need to address it. But it needs to be addressed by the presidents and by the state board. Finally, I think the public policy issue that this committee and that this legislature has to deal with is one that is grappled with by all states. And as it was already mentioned, the distribution of dollars fairly and equitably. There are some states that have even been sued by the disproportionate distribution of funds because certain districts benefit and others don't. This is not an easy task that you have in front of you or the legislature. How do you equally distribute dollars across the state to best serve all the residents of Oregon, not just Portland? I'm not worried about Portland only. I'm also worried about that white male who's been dislocated somewhere in Southwestern's district or Central, or the white female who's got 1.5 children in the stats and is now working maybe one or two jobs and is trying to come to the community college and maybe closed out. I don't have the luxury, Madam Chair, members of the board, to only think about Portland. If I made comments that disparaged or simply put my college ahead of everyone else because I don't care about anybody else, I would have my colleagues at the national level to look at. And then they would ask, well, how do you support and what do you look at in terms of community colleges and their role in higher education? I appreciate the opportunity to speak in front of you today, and while knowing that this is a very difficult decision, please be assured, please be clear, that Portland Community College is concerned about the entire state. It's concerned about the two contracting colleges that are tied to us for their accreditation and their communities. The board is unanimous in its opposition to all the funding bills. And I commit to you that I will work very hard with my colleagues to look at ways in which we can come to some resolution. Dr. Barber threw out a suggested idea. That sounds reasonable. And there are a lot of reasonable ideas. And yes, some of the colleges have benefited and some of have not benefited from this formula that was created long before I got here. I appreciate your time. I appreciate your attention to my comments. And I will take any questions that you might have, Madam Chair.
Representative Virgin.
Yes. carry on. When you say the funding formula is flawed, I have two questions. One is why a recommendation or a solution didn't come from the President's Council, since most of you seem to agree that it's flawed. And when you say you agree with Dr. Barber, is that the $6 million off the top that you're referring to as a suggestion that you agree with?
Number one, the funding formula, the approach to the funding formula was simply to deal with moving monies around and dealing with whether we were going to implement the current funding formula and how fast we were going to do that. So that didn't deal with a bigger issue of how we were going to deal with property tax or recommendations to the state board. Dr. Barber has been consistent. And you need to know this. He has consistently said that property tax was an issue for him. Your second question, I forgot.
It's the $6 million off the top. The property tax is
no.
That's not what you're.
No, I'm suggesting that he's correct in his basic statement that the funding formula is flawed. He threw out one suggestion. There might be other suggestions that might help make it more equitable, so that we are able to distribute dollars in a much more fair and equitable manner. For example, per FTE, per full-time student, Tillamook gets much more than we do at Portland Community College, and that we educate, you know, thousands and thousands of many more students. The question is, how do we come up with a formula that addresses the problems of Klamath, Portland, Mount Hood, and others? So his idea of taking $6 million off the top is one idea, Madam Vice Chair. Not just that's not the end all. There are others that might work. But I think we need to look at it from a much more administrative fashion, rather than bringing a half a dozen different bills when, in fact, some of them even contradict each other. And it simply clouds, in my opinion, the issue of how we're going to deal with this from a public policy matter within the community colleges and through the state board. I don't know if I've answered your question, ma'am.
Yes.
Other questions? All right, President Carrillo,
thank you very much.
Cam Preuss Brawley.
Good morning. For the record, Cam Preuss Brawley, I'm the Commissioner for Community Colleges. I'm here on behalf of the State Board of Education. They are my boss. We do not support this legislation. Students attending community colleges across the state deserve approximately the same level of service no matter where they go to college. That's the policy and principal issue here. Decision to consider property taxes as a factor in funding students does provide for a similar value paid to each college for the students that attend there. Having said that, perfect formulas to fund students and colleges is elusive. If there was one, we would all be using it. Unfortunately, there is also not sufficient resources to fund all the students that want to come to community colleges. This exacerbates the perfect formula debate. It's important to share with this committee that the State Board of Education understands and acknowledges that the formula that they have used for the past 5 or 6 years is not working in a declining revenue situation, and they have requested a review of the formula. They have requested that the President's Council meet with them to propose a new formula. What we need is a formula that's designed to pay the colleges for the students that are served in as fair and equitable a fashion as possible. this bill purports to remove one factor. I would concur with some of the comments that we believe that when you look at a funding formula, you need to look at all the factors around that funding formula, and to look at only one diminishes both the possibility of that of ever finding the perfect formula or of bringing people together to help resolve the issue. So once again, we do not support this legislation. Thank you. I'd be happy to take any questions.
Questions for the witness? Do I understand then that it's the intention to revisit the formula? Is that what I hear from your testimony? That with or without legislation, that your intention is to revisit the funding formula?
Mr. Chair, that is correct. The State Board has put a timeline of December of 2003 that they would like to see from the President's Council a proposal. And this is not to be done in parallel. The State Board isn't going to do their own work. They're going to be working with the President's Council. Two of the witnesses, President Carrione and President Barber, are members of that committee to bring forward to the State Board another proposal for the perfect formula.
Well, we'll settle for good.
As would I.
Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you tell us what the composition is for the rest of the committee? Obviously, those two presidents. Is it just community college presidents, or are there others involved?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hobson, there are, I believe, five community college presidents and myself that serve on this committee.
Other questions? Yeah, Representative Bridger.
I guess I'm a little confused. If there was a plan that there was going to be some discussion and consensus building and a new formula, or at least looking at the formula and all, why do we have all this legislation brought at this session? Were the plans as a result of all this legislation brought? Because it takes a while to get legislation together and to bring it. So I'm confused as to the timeline.
Mr. Chair, Representative Verger, I'm not certain that I can address the impetus for this legislation. The State Board has been in discussion with the President's Council since April of last year regarding the funding formula. The Presidents did come back, as was attested earlier, with a proposal. The State Board accepted the majority of that proposal. At the same time, they did say, this doesn't seem to be working particularly well. Let's step back and build a new proposal from the ground up.
Okay. Other questions? All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That's all I have signed up for today's hearing on House Bill 2656. Is there anyone in the room who has not testified that would like to be heard? Okay. I want to thank everybody for your testimony. We will take this under consideration and see where we go from here. But I wanted to have a good airing of the issue today, and I think we've done that. So with that, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2656. And committee, this being the only bill we had on the agenda for today, we are adjourned.